Mary Green v. John Potter, appeal number 08-1829. Okay, Mr. Whitney.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Your Honors, the central issue on this appeal is not a legal issue per se, but a factual and analytical one. Rule 50 speaks for itself. A party has to be fully heard on an issue before a court may enter judgment as a matter of law. The defendant on this appeal has argued that this does not mean that a plaintiff literally has a right to present every shred of evidence after it's already been made clear that he or she cannot win. That may be so, but those circumstances were not present in this case. Instead, both the defendant and the court committed the cardinal error of presuming that because the plaintiff could not prove her case through her own testimony, she therefore could not prove her case at all. The law does not support any such proposition. No authority for that proposition was ever presented. And the law clearly does not require a plaintiff to prove her case through her own testimony. And rightly so, because such a holding would be absurd. In my reply brief, I gave the example of someone who sues for battery but has to rely on other witnesses or exhibits because she was slugged from behind and has no idea who did it or even when it happened.
What evidence of gender-based discrimination did you have or in the record, either by way of testimony or by proffer?
Primarily by way of exhibits, Your Honor, and that the exhibits were really the star witness in this case, and they have to be analyzed and explained in order to make sense of them. The exhibits consisted of the clock ring data showing who worked overtime on their non-scheduled days, what day, etc. The list for each quarter showing who was on the 8-hour overtime desired list, and a seniority list to show who should have been called on any given week. This data has to be analyzed. When you analyze the data in that fashion, and even after you factor out all the weeks on which the plaintiff was unavailable because she was on sick leave or whatever, you find that on 21 different occasions, the entire or all or most of the seniority list was completely cycled through and she was bypassed. She did testify that she was regularly on home on Sundays. She had a phone. She wasn't using it for a computer. She was available.
Is she the only woman on the list?
During some quarters, there was one other woman. On other quarters, it was mostly males on the list.
And how was she treated?
She was treated differently because we...
The other woman.
I'm sorry?
The other woman.
If we had been allowed to present our expert witness, his analysis would have shown that she, too, did suffer some discrimination.
Did you tell the district judge that?
I don't recall whether we included that in the offer of proof or not. However, I believe that that was included in our response to summary judgment.
On some of those weeks, those days when your client was did not work on a Sunday and wanted to, she was scheduled to work on her other off day, am I correct?
She, in many of those cases, actually on 10 of the cases of the 21 instances in which we claim discrimination, she did ultimately get to work on another non-scheduled day. However, using the word scheduled is a little problematic because the testimony at trial, first of all by Mr. Polovich, was that the manager would typically, he might have been said in all cases, but commonly, would only schedule on that day. And the plaintiff herself testified.
I'm sorry, that day meaning?
Meaning, for example, if the other non-scheduled day was a Friday, he wouldn't schedule it until Friday.
I see.
And the plaintiff said that she would, the most lead time in which she would be notified would be one day before.
So she wasn't pre-scheduled for the other day.
Exactly.
And therefore was really available on Monday. She was, or rather on Sunday. She wasn't precluded by a previous scheduling commitment for the Friday?
Exactly. That was our point on that. So on the one hand, we claim that even though in 10 of those 21 instances she did get overtime later in the week, she still, a reasonable jury could conclude that she still should have been called on that Sunday because of the habit of not pre-scheduling. It's only when it's pre-scheduled, which would have been a rarity, that you should deny someone the Sunday overtime because she might be called later in the week. That's not how the system was supposed to work. But secondly, even if we factor out all 10 of those occasions, that still leaves 11 occasions in which plaintiff, through the documented evidence, could prove and provided proof that the only way that the male co-workers could have gotten scheduled for the overtime was to pass her by because the list had cycled through. And that's after we factor out all the weekends that she was not available to work because of sick leave or family medical leave, et cetera.
And you plan to call the alleged discriminator as an adverse witness, am I right?
That's correct.
Were you able to give any proffer to the district court with respect to the expected testimony from him?
What was stated in the colloquy that's in the record is that we plan to introduce the exhibits and use the exhibits to introduce that evidence through the adverse witness.
I see.
And that was our strategy, that we wanted to go through each quarter. We're going to take the adverse witness through it and try to highlight that through the adverse witness.
As I read the transcript, the district court seemed to feel that this, at most, was a question of a supervisor who had two buddies and he gave his buddies preference, but not necessarily that he engaged in gender-based discrimination. In other words, he had two friends. The two friends got preferential treatment. Why isn't that a viable read of the record?
Well, first of all, there was more than two buddies. I think when we look at the data, there was like three, four, five that received more of this Sunday overtime.
That would be out of a workforce of how many, sir?
It varied by quarter, but typically there some quarter be 10, another would be 12. It varied by quarter. And that analysis is broken down in the exhibit 9A that we did get into evidence, so you can see it quarter by quarter. But secondly, in response to your question, Your Honor, we did also plead this as a disparate impact case, as well as an individual discrimination case.
Do you
case.
Have enough data to prove disparate impact?
Well, that's what our expert witness, had we been allowed to present him, essentially would have supported that part of it. But even on a more intuitive level, if in fact a supervisor is favoring his buddies, so to speak, and let's say there's three or four of them, and it works that he's constantly calling them. We presented in the record at page 464. We showed a comparison between plaintiff and this Mr. Buckingham, who is one of the buddies, so to speak. And he received 2.5 times more overtime during this period as my client. If we show the same pattern with some of the others as well, clearly the effect of this, the impact of this buddy system, for lack of a better word, was that the female employee was still discriminated against. She did not get the overtime to which she was entitled. So I think a reasonable jury, we were prepared to present evidence so that a reasonable jury could have found adverse impact as well as the direct discrimination. And essentially, Your Honor, I think what happened here is that it was our strategy to use the adverse witness to introduce this evidence. We never got to do that. Now, that may have been a good strategy, may have been a bad strategy, but it was our strategy. We were not allowed to present that evidence in the manner that we wish to do. And I would like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Hey, Mr. Simpkins.
May it please the court. My name is Robert Simpkins, and I represent the appellee, and I tried the case that's up on appeal now. It's important to understand that after Ms. Green testified, there was absolutely no evidence at all of any type of discrimination against her because she was a woman. In fact, one of the dates that she claimed she should have worked, another woman worked, and I'm talking about specifically Sundays now. The fact of the matter is this woman knew that when she signed up for the overtime desired list, which are the non-scheduled days that you sign up for to be available for, she signed up for a Sunday and a Monday, and then that changed from a Sunday to Friday in July of 1999. And she knew that management had the right to select her, even if she was first up on a Sunday, on a Monday or the following Friday. And the end result of all of this is that...
That was all in the collective bargaining agreement?
Yes, sir. And the end result of all of this is that she worked a total of 22 days of overtime. Plaintiffs put their case on and not once asked Ms. Green whether or not she had any reason to believe that she had been discriminated against because she was a woman. I didn't ask her that, but I went through each and every date that she claimed that she should have worked on a Sunday, and on almost every one of those dates showed that she was either unavailable, either by way of bookending sick leave, Family Medical Leave Act, or she worked the following Monday or the following Friday. Even if somehow, some way, she could have proved that there was some discrimination there, she certainly couldn't prove any adverse end result because she didn't lose any overtime. She worked 22 days of overtime, which was more or at least as much overtime as anybody on her tour worked. And counsel stated that he needed to call Mr. Rendleman to get these exhibits admitted. That isn't quite true. These exhibits were listed on the Rule 26 disclosure, and in Judge Murphy's courtroom, once you list them, all you have to do is ask that they be admitted without objection, and the government had made no objection. Everything that he had listed on his Rule 26 was admitted or admissible. This is a case that, frankly, should have been thrown out at summary judgment motion, and when we finally got to trial, it became clearly evident that this woman couldn't in any way, shape, or form show that she was discriminated against or that any adverse action resulted from it. And that is all I have to say. Unless there are any other questions, I'll stand on the brief.
Okay, thank you. Whitney, anything further?
Briefly, Your
Honor.
First, Your Honors, it is true the exhibits were admitted, but it was our plan, our strategy, to use Rendleman's testimony to go through and establish the analysis that's necessary to make sense of those exhibits. We were not allowed to do that. As a matter of fact, the court had promised prior to ruling on the Rule 50 that I would be allowed to put on my expert witness, and then he turned around and Rule 50'd the case before I was allowed to do that. Secondly, while he allowed me to get in some of these exhibits on redirect, he admonished me that I had to do this very quickly, and even as I was examining the witness, said quickly, directing this to me, making it abundantly clear that he was not going to allow plaintiff to go through and present the entire analysis to the jury by means of this witness. So we clearly were prejudiced in that regard. The other thing I'd like to call, well, my time has expired.
Finish it.
Well, the other thing is with respect to the amount of overtime, again, calling attention to the analysis I provided in our motion to reconsider. It showed that in comparison with the comparative Buckingham, that he received a total, counting the other non-scheduled day, of 86 overtime days versus the 22 that my client received.
Thank you. The case will be taken under advisement.